Oh, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and I'm joined today by Mr. Terence Corrigan. Today we're going to be discussing how the country's labor laws are changing, or at least the discussion around them is changing. We're going to be talking about the fallout from the ill-advised trip by the head of the South African National Defense Force to Iran. And we're going to be talking about some corruption allegations in the involving SA tourism. So it is quite interesting to note some comments made by Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi from KZN, Nhlanhla Mkhwanazi, who of course came to the national spotlight after he basically accused the police minister Senzo Mchunu of ties to illegal gangs and basically involvement in criminality and sort of tacit complicity in political killings. It seems though he's not going away from the national stage. He was speaking, I think, at an event with the premier of KZN, and he made some comments that I really didn't expect, but I think do show the way the wind is shifting in the country. So he was saying, we need to interrogate this thing, premier. Speaking to the Premier of KZN, you said the country is going down in front of our eyes. The reality is that we have too many of these things that are wrong with our country that contribute, and labor laws are one of those. The population of KZN is growing, but the number of police officers is going down, thanks to unions, the labor people who say, we want salaries for our members. So the more government salaries increases salaries, the less they employ and the more unemployment there is. He also said that it pained him to watch the National Union of Metal Workers, General Secretary Irvin Jim, talk about the closure of the tire manufacturer Goodyear, which shut their Eastern Cape plant relatively recently, which caused 1,000 people to lose their jobs. And Mkhwanazi went on to say, when you have companies that are starting to shut down, you need to ask yourself, the higher the salary we need, the less employment there is. And that is a reality we can't avoid. It's a fact. We must face it. It is there. We experience it in the police, and so does everybody. We have to employ other means to try and balance this. Terence, I don't know still what to make necessarily of Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi. But I think this is one of those moments where you really see how old sacrosanct ideas are kind of falling by the wayside as people are just getting fed up with the crises that we have with unemployment. What's your take on this?
Yeah, as you say, what was sacrosanct is now up for discussion. We've seen this certainly with BEE. Rapidly may it continue, and soon may these appalling policies be things of the past. I think, unfortunately, we still have a long way to go. Yeah, labor legislation has also been one of those holy cows. That was, in a sense, part of the bargain for the union's ongoing backing of the ANC. To a large extent, COSATU has exercised a veto over any kind of labor reform. This goes back to the 90s. There was some suggestion when the gear plan was introduced to introduce, I think the phrase was regulated flexibility, whatever that may have meant. But the point is that
euphemism.
But the point is that it was seen that the more restrictions you placed on the labor market, the more difficult you're going to make employment. Now, I think it is interesting that these ideas are being floated. I do think though that even those of us in favor of them should just take a moment to take a deep breath and say this is not a silver bullet. Yes, it is part of an overall package, but at the moment, South Africa is simply not a greatly investable proposition. One reason is the rate of violent and property crime. You know, something that the general would, of course, be very familiar with, given that this is his remit. The failure of logistics. The failure of local government. So yes, you know, cheap labor or cheaper labor or more flexible working conditions or whatever you want to however you want to put it, is not in itself going to be going to be revolutionary. I think it would probably have some effect on the bottom end of the labor market. But to get South Africa moving, we need a great deal more.
Yeah, you know, I think there is some sort of it's kind of slightly, you know, wrongly presented, I think, a little bit by the Lieutenant General here. You know, obviously we do have things that artificially increase the cost of labor here and contribute to unemployment, like our artificially high minimum wage in some cases. But I think it's the flexibility stuff that really is the key. That is the ability to hire and to fire more easily, right? If it's very difficult to fire people, you're much less likely to hire people because you know that if you get a bad employee, there's not much you can do about it. Whereas you can take a risk on people when you can fire them more easily. Sounds counterintuitive, but it is the reality of how labor laws actually affect things.
But also the question of overall productivity. You know, a worker in Sweden costs a great deal more than a worker in South Africa. But the point is that person is likely far more educated. So yes, you know, these things. I think what I'm getting at is they fall into a system. And yes, we need to untie individual knots, but ultimately there's a whole tapestry that needs to be unpicked.
Yes, but it's definitely a thread in that. And I wonder what the, you know, because Lieutenant General Mkhwanazi is experiencing a sort of, he's got a bit of a kind of a populist vibe surge around him, you know, for his comments on the police minister. So I wonder what the sort of general response to him will be. I noticed that I think some of the comments in response to this by the unions were much more restrained than they normally are when this kind of criticism is made of our labor legislation. And I suspect then that there's a bit of fear of getting into a big public clash with this guy. But still something interesting to watch. And as you know, as we said at the beginning, I think this really is a sign that South Africans are interested in doing things a different way.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So we covered, I can't even remember if it was this week or last week, but anyway, recently we covered the sort of bizarre, I guess you could, I described, I think, as a love fest between the head of South Africa's military and officials in the Iranian government. When the head of our military went off to Iran and basically said that we're on the same side as Iran against the forces of, you know, colonialism and imperialism, and, you know, essentially implying that we are aligned with Iran against the US. The US government has now taken note of this, and they have issued a statement saying, "They note with great concern the statements made by senior SANDF official in Iran, as well as conflicting messages from senior SA government representatives in response." Initially, the Department of International Relations and the presidency distanced themselves from the general's comments in Iran and basically say they sort of implied that he had gone kind of rogue and that he wasn't permitted to speak like this and that he had sort of gotten over his skis here. And then he had a partial defense made of him by Minister of Defense Ajit Motsweka, who said, quote, "I gave him permission, and that's why I wasn't sure whether this is because Iran is in conflict with America that we mustn't touch them and we must not get close. We have our own bilaterals with different countries. The issue is that Iran was fighting with America. If he had said it in Israel, they would have been happy." Well, are you surprised the Americans are angry at us for hanging out with their enemies? Like, I don't get the minister's point here. Obviously, they're upset with us. They're a more important relationship. It's just, you know, blunder after blunder. Terrence, what do you make of this?
Yeah, the minister can apply for a job at a restaurant because her word salads are truly delicious. There are so many problems with this. The first is that it is not in a constitutional democracy, which is run by a civilian executive, it is not for the armed forces, a member of the armed forces, to express political views, no matter how much, no matter how closely he should, he might hold him. Now, I see there was a comment, I think it was by Stephen Kroetus, although I do speak under correction, that said, well, you know, this happens elsewhere. You know, General Milley phoned the, his Chinese counterpart. Yeah, that was also particularly a particularly egregious thing to do. However, you may feel about Trump. Yeah, that's not what a general does, unless you're in some sort of distressed gun government where the president wears a uniform. And long may we never be in that position. I think though that he is probably expressing opinions that have been I wouldn't say probably. He's expressing opinions that I think speak for a large portion of South Africa's political class. It's not the first time this sort of thing has been happening. Former ambassador to Venezuela pledged that South African troops would come and defend them from an invasion. Though we struggle to get supplies to the DRC, so how are we going to get it across the Atlantic Ocean is anyone's guess. He was actually reprimanded for that. That which I think was a far less sensitive issue. Venezuela doesn't hold the same sort of political or ideological place in America's imaginary. So yeah, you know, I think that this is the kind of thing which even with the relationships, you know, first rate, would have been damaging. And at this point, it's hard to think of a descriptor that can express the problem forcefully enough. I think if there was one thing on my abstract list of things we should not be doing, I think right on the top is sending senior general to Iran to expound on the wonders of the South African Iranian defense cooperation. It's just no. If you know this was the Minister of Water Affairs or something talking about desalination, it would be one thing. Military issues, very, very different.
No, I think that's exactly right. And what's also striking here is how government seems to be struggling to get even on the same page. Mm. You had Durko and the presidency saying one thing, and then you have the Ministry of Defense basically saying kind of the opposite and saying, ah, it's not a big deal. Stop whining about it. Get over it. And this is just, you know, a sign that the government is, even at that highest level, not really able to coordinate. I mean, yeah, it's not like they're from different parties, right? These are all ANC ministries. And they're just not able to sort of come together on the same messaging.
Right. Well, let me just invoke a little bit of history here. During the 1980s, this was there was an equivalent problem. What finance or foreign affairs might want to communicate was often very different from what the the sort of security the securocrats were saying. In fact, there was an attempt in the mid 80s to send, what, funnily enough, an eminent persons group from the Commonwealth to South Africa to try and probe ideas for a settlement, and oops, there was a cross border raid, and South Africa was going off and doing some stuff in real estate that was not its own, and that all fell apart. And the thinking was that there were elements in the government that were determined to sabotage it. I think part of what you're seeing here is what happens as a political regime kind of becomes senile and begins to die.
Yes.
It can't keep on the same page. People are grabbing for whatever for whatever period they can.
No, that's exactly right. One can only imagine how Parks Tau, who's been trying to negotiate some sort of trade deal with the US to reduce the tariffs on us, feels when he sees something like this. All right, let's move on to our last story. And there's been a bit of outrage directed at the Minister of Tourism, Patricia de Lille, from Outer, because of her actions towards the South African Tourism Board. The South African Tourism Board decided that it was going to suspend the chief executive of SA Tourism relating to allegations of misconduct, that she had authorized the payment of 4.1 million rand to a service provider for a failed exhibition in Dubai on behalf of South Africa. However, after the board suspended the chief executive, the minister said that the board meeting had been improper, that it had not been allowed, and that as a result she was going to be dissolving the board. The spokesperson for the minister said, in their written, referring to the board, in their written representations dated 14th August, the board members failed to address the important issues about the legality of the procedure followed by the board when it convened a special board meeting at which the unlawful resolution was taken. And now the tourism board has been dissolved. I don't know, Terence, not a great look. A senior official gets held accountable for misspending by a board, and immediately the whole board is dissolved with a speed and lightning fast, you know, activity that we don't normally see from government. What's your take on this?
Well, as I was saying to you before, before the show kicked off, it seems to me that there's always a bigger fish. Somebody does something which displeases the oversight authority, which is the board. Now, true enough, in South Africa, whether the board of a state-owned enterprise is actually committed to good corporate governance is a bit of a coin toss thing. And
as we know from many painful years of experience with ESCOM.
But, you know, that's the way it's supposed to work. We don't interfere in operational issues. We keep an eye on corporate governance. And then along comes the shareholder supremo and says, aha, stomp. The look is decidedly bad. And as you say, I think for jaded South Africans, the fact that it is done so quickly sends a very clear message that something untoward is afoot. Because if there is a real issue, we will take years for it. So, yeah, not great.
You know, this is so obviously there's more details to the story that I'm sure everyone involved would be able to give, and so I'm sure there's also sides that maybe there is some procedural irregularity with holding this particular meeting at this particular speed and taking this resolution this way, but it misses the point, which is that, you know, as you say, we're so used to just seeing this where any attempt at accountability, any attempt at just making the system sort of work and people who are not performing or who are doing the wrong thing getting held to account gets quashed. And then we wonder why so many of our institutions are in chaos and in disrepair. And this is one of the things that really does need to just that you can change. Almost, I'm not going to say on day one because it's a long process to change this, but you could start changing on day one without passing a single law, changing a single policy. Just fire the people, even with our complex labor laws, fire the people who don't perform. Follow the rules to make sure that people do what they're supposed to do. It's just good management. It just takes political will. It's just the ability to take on special interests. That's all you really need. Well, and if you do that, a lot of things will start to move in the right direction.
Well, earlier this year, Sarah Gon and I published a paper on the public service, and that's one of the. It seems to me that's the sort of missing realization that you can have whatever systems you want, you can have whatever checks and balances, but you're dead in the water if you just don't have good management. You know, somebody willing to actually say, "No, you do this. You don't do that. I'll reward you for performing, and I'll sack you for not." And you know, being supported by your superiors in this. Unfortunately, so much of what has gone on in the country, or in our public institutions, has made their core functions almost peripheral, while centering some of those subsidiary or patronage based benefits. Look, I wonder, would South Africans get that upset about corruption if it was just a case of, you know, we have a well-running country where certain people take 10% off the top? You know, you might grumble. The problem is we have a badly running country and some people taking a lot more than 10% off the top. Right. You know, and unless you're going to draw the line somewhere, the message there is unmistakable. We can just keep on taking.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Okay, well, that's all the time we had for today. If we are missing any breaking stories today, it's only because we're recording this slightly earlier than usual. So do please forgive us for that. However, we will be doing the live show tomorrow at 1:30 on Fridays, as we usually do. So join us tomorrow, and we hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks, everyone, and have a wonderful day. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.